Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
another tune that
thank you.
Friends and neighbors and radio land, we are indeed happy to come into your homes, to ride in your cars, your place of business, or wherever you may be at this very present moment. We are convinced that we cannot allow evil speaking medicine, anything that would separate man from God, keep us from knowing, because we know. And we want you to know that God is still on the throne. Not only that, but we want you also to know that God is moving. And this is the day of God's moving. When others have given up and became weary and discouraged on account of certain conditions, and then there are multitudes of people in the valley of decision. We have fears without, fears that when we would do good, evil is always present. In the midst of sickness and in the midst of disease, in the midst of stress and in the midst of strain, in the midst of the overpowering of drugs and alcohol and even violence, the fact remains the same, and that fact is the fact that God is still moving. He's moving in me, and I hope and I trust by now He is moving in you. For when I think about the goodness of Jesus and all that he has done for me, my soul cries out, hallelujah. I praise God for saving a wretch like me. We're going into the word here in a little bit, but nevertheless, God is still a good, good God. Yeah, God has been good to us. He woke us up this morning and started us on our way. So sit back and take a listen to the word of God. As we will discover today, how to be a great dad.
Church, it's really good to be with you. And again, dads, we love you, and we're so grateful for you. I'm grateful for my father, who I believe is here at this service. And thanks for doing such a good job on me. You really nailed it. So, man, it was an eventful week for us. I don't know about you, but my wife and I really did have one of the busiest weeks we've had in a long time. Every night we had a church event. Every morning something was going on. It was just very, very busy. And amidst the busyness, something happened this week that I feel as a pastor compelled to talk about. I don't do this very often. And again, I don't really talk about my personal political affiliation a whole lot on the stage. But I do feel like something happened that was so significant this week. I do need just to mention it. And our church has always been a place where no one is perfect and everyone is welcome. That's what we say. And we don't say that because that's our thing. We say that because that's what Jesus taught. Jesus easily could have set up a political kingdom if he wanted to. He definitely had enough influence and clout to begin a political revolution, a political resistance against the Roman Empire and against the Greco-Judeo world that he lived in. But he did not do that. Instead, he began a spiritual revolution. And he always said, no one is perfect, everyone is welcome, no matter what you believe in. You see, Jesus believed in this thought of the freedom of religion. He said, I'm not going to force you to follow me. I want you to follow me, right? And there's a big difference between those two things. I love that invitational freedom that Jesus gives us. Now, this election cycle that we were most recently in was very just gross. I had a hard time enduring it. It was like, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. I can't wait till it's over. And then I got over it. It's like, this doesn't feel like it's over. It feels like we're still in it. Like, every single time I turn on the news or anything I put through my phone, it's like, whoa, the most shocking thing you've ever heard. So much so, so extreme, that I feel like we've been desensitized to things that are truly extraordinary. This week, something that happened that I think was truly tragic and extraordinary. I want to make it clear before I go into this that I have a deep respect for many of our politicians. There's a man named Bernie Sanders. I respect his character. I think he stands by what he believes in. But this week, something happened that, again, I feel like I need to talk about. During a congressional hearing, there was a man named Russell Vought who was under examination to become a part of the Congressional Budget Office. Russell Vought is a graduate of my alma mater, Wheaton College. I have a deep respect for him and his beliefs. He is a very orthodox Christian man. Orthodox just means he holds the same beliefs we've always held for 2,000 years. And during the examination, Bernie Sanders made it clear that anyone who holds on to orthodox Christian beliefs, Muslim beliefs, even orthodox Jewish beliefs or Buddhist beliefs is unfit to serve in public office. And that's kind of a big deal. He voted against Russell Vought because of that. And this to me is a classic case of I'm tolerant as long as you agree with me. And that's not tolerance at all. That's not tolerance at all. Essentially what he was saying was the only people who are fit to participate in society are people who are just like me. And that to me is a dangerous statement. Jesus was never this way. Christianity has always been no one's perfect and everyone's welcome, no matter what your belief is, no matter what your orientation is, you're welcome to come and hear the message of Jesus. That's what we want. Everybody is welcome to participate. And not only as a Christian, but as an American, I stand for a society where people are welcome from all backgrounds to participate with a complete freedom of religion, a freedom to seek and find the truth in their own way. And I just want you to hear today, no matter what your religious affiliation is, whether you have a religion or not, if you believe in the freedom to seek and find the truth as an American citizen, I want you to know that that is under attack today. And I just want to challenge you to stand up for love in a respectful, tolerant way. And I want you to know, I think we live in a world that is increasingly extreme. I think it's hard to have respectful dialogue. And my goal when I talk with people is not to provoke. My goal is to persuade. And there's a big difference between those two things. I think that's what we're called to do respectfully. I made on my personal Facebook page a post talking about exactly what I just shared with you. And my goal was to have a conversation with people who have different opinions than I do. And I did. I was able to have a great conversation with some people. I connected with an old classmate from my high school, and we had a really good conversation. But I also had people say some extremely just crazy, crazy things, like violent things. And I deleted their posts. It was shocking. And, it really wasn't that shocking because I think the art of compromise, tolerance, and conversation in our society is being lost in an increasingly extreme world. And I think people from both ends of the political spectrum are becoming increasingly extreme. And a real tolerance, that is not ranting on people who disagree with you, but it's the idea of actually conversing with people who disagree with you, that art is being lost. And I think it's a sad thing. I think it's a bad thing for our society. I think we need the ability to respect and dignify human beings who disagree with us. I think that's a really, really good thing. And I want to challenge us as Christians to stand in love, respect, and tolerance, okay? That doesn't mean posting, like, crazy things from sources that probably aren't that verified. That means, man, having a respectful, dignified, persuasive conversation with people who disagree with us. I want to challenge us to stand in love, respect, and tolerance of all human life. I think this extremity is a great strategy for Satan. He doesn't have to get us to make bad choices. What Satan does is he gets human beings to make good choices in America, but then he gets us to turn those good choices into God choices. Okay? And that's a great strategy, isn't it? Because when a good thing turns into a God thing, we all know that it turns into a bad thing. Perfect example, I know it's a really old movie, but some of you probably remember this movie with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore called Fever Pitch. Okay? If you haven't seen it, Jimmy Fallon's character is like a super nice guy, meets this girl, they fall in love, everything's going good until baseball season starts. Okay? Jimmy Fallon is a fanatical baseball fan of the Red Sox, right? And some of you would say the Red Sox are evil, but let's be honest. You know, they're a baseball team. They're whatever. They're not really bad. It's just when you worship them, they can begin to ruin your life. And that's exactly what happens for Fallon's character. Okay? His worship of the Red Sox proceeds to derail his life, derail his love interests, and derail everything that he wants to do in life because he worships this team. And when a good thing turns into a God thing, it becomes a bad thing. Then this is exactly what Satan does in so many areas of our life, isn't it? Okay? He does this with sports, obviously. That's what we're talking about. He does this with hobbies. Okay? Hobbies aren't bad. Fishing isn't bad, fathers. But when you begin to turn this good thing that God gave us, we all can agree, Jesus was, it's a biblical sport, fishing. Jesus was, fishing with his friends all the time in the Bible. It's not bad. But when you turn it into a God thing, it becomes a bad thing. Right? It begins to overtake your life. Kids are good, but when you begin to worship your kids, root your identity in your kids, man, that's not good. Kids are not emotionally stable, so you root your identity in your kids' emotional instability, what's going to happen? You're going to become emotionally unstable, right? I see this happen with marriage. People who worship their marriage or work, that's really common. Beauty, how many people worship their beauty, right? They put so much into their beauty saying, if I am beautiful, then I'm valuable. Partying, I don't think partying is a bad thing. I think it's great to have a good time with friends, but when you make partying the reason for your existence, it's like, yeah, it's Friday, awesome, it's amazing, and then, you live to party, it begins to become unsatisfying. A lot of you have been there, or are there, right? I didn't get what I thought I was going to get out of it. I don't feel good because I'm worshiping this partying. I see this happen with vacations, people always living for the next vacation. I can't wait to go to this new place, and what I was talking about at the start of this conversation, politics. I think it's so funny because we live in a society that actually worships politics right now. That's what we're doing. And our world is becoming very extreme. Everywhere you look, people are demanding extremists. If you don't affirm and agree with and support what I believe, then you're the enemy. And I think people begin to look through these extreme lenses, right? Say, Republicans are evil. They're the devil. Anybody who's a Republican is no friend of mine. It's like, come on, they're not. Democrats are evil. Anybody who's a Democrat, is not a friend of mine. It's like, this is extreme. This is crazy. What are we doing? Bernie is evil. He's the Antichrist. Come on, guys. Trump is evil. He's terrible. Look. They're not the enemy. And on the other side of the coin, Trump will not be able to fix everything. Bernie will not be able to fix anything. People said, if the Cubs win the World Series, my life will be better. Is it? Is it really better permanently? I mean, it was better for a few days, okay? It was better for a little while, but I would argue that all the problems in the world did not go away. We still have problems, right? Despite a miracle happening. The people I like most in life are compromisers, okay? I love having a wide variety of different perspectives in my friend circle. I enjoy that. I enjoy engaging with people who are able to be truly tolerant. I know that I hold some views that are very specific and cut out, and I love that I have friends who disagree with me, right? I desperately want them to agree with me. I want to persuade them, but I'm going to respect, dignify, and tolerate them even though they disagree with me. I think that's really, really important. I think it's admirable, and I think it's truly contrarian to have people in your life who disagree with you as friends. And I'm not saying that you need to agree with or endorse what they have, but I do think it's important that we have people who disagree with us that are in our lives. Now, I think one of the biggest threats to godly fatherhood in the world that we live in today is this extreme culture that I'm talking about. I think this extremeness is derailing what fathers were meant to be in the world we live in. I think it's destroying the work that God wants to do in our lives. And I've got 3 points for fathers today. I'm going to review them all really quickly at the start. These are the points for the talk. Number one, being a father is a balancing act. Number two, being a father means recovering from mistakes. And number three, helping our fathers means encouraging, not discouraging. Let's go to the first point. Being a father is a balancing act. I think we live in an American culture that tells men, you got to go all out. Women are told to find men who are extreme, right? You find a man who is extremely focused on being an entrepreneur. I just love his passion. He's just so passionate about his business. And I just love the way this man is such a brave entrepreneur, so attractive. Is it really, Or you see this guy who's a courageous leader. Oh, he's just such a courageous, just so focused on, reading. He's just, he's so attractive, unbelievable. That's what's, Or you see this guy who's totally tender. Oh, he's just so soft-hearted. You look for this one trait that's extreme, and that's what our society says is great. Here's the thing. If you marry one of those guys, you're going to be disappointed. Because great men, being a father is a balancing act. Okay? I've got 3 points in this talk, but my first point has 3 sub-points. Okay, so I'm going to talk about three things that a father needs to balance. Okay, the first thing that I think a father needs to balance is they need to have a balance of provision versus presence. They need to have a balance of provision and presence. I think God calls fathers to be providers. That's something that we're called to do. But here's the thing. When you are a provider, you cannot be present, right? When you're a provider, you can't be present in life because you're off providing. Now, on the other hand, you're called to be present as well. But when you're present, you can't be providing. And the reality is you need to have a balance of both. If you marry a man who's only focused on providing, that'll be great. Your kid will have, you know, the best baseball cleats, the best batting gloves, the absolute best CPX baseball bat, but your husband will never be there to watch him swing it, right? He won't be present. And the problem is, I think sometimes what we do is we get so focused on providing, and men do this all the time. We get so focused on overtime and weekends and holidays and time and a half and this and that, we miss out on everything. And the goal as a father is to walk across the balancing beam of fatherhood, leading our family, leading our children across this balancing beam to successful adulthood on the other end, right? That's what we want. We want to lead our kids across the balance beam of life. It's a balance of both. If you're present all the time, well, that's great. You're at all the games. You're there with your kids, but your family isn't going to have what they need to survive, right? Successful fathers need to balance both of these because being a father is a balancing act. The second thing fathers need to balance is discipline versus tenderness. This is interesting to me because the pendulum always swings from one extreme to the other, right? We live in this extreme culture. The greatest generation, okay, the Great Depression kids who fought World War II, raised the baby boomers. And the greatest generation were extreme disciplinarians. They disciplined their kids a lot. So a lot of baby boomers in here, you were raised by parents who were extremely focused on discipline. And because of that, you never acted out or acted up. You did good things with your life. The problem is you're totally out of touch with your emotions. Those of you who were raised by baby boomers, you know your parents have extreme difficulty articulating and expressing their emotions, right? It's a big problem. And what the baby boomers did, they said, man, our parents disciplined us so much. Our childhood was so off balance. You know what we're going to do? We're never going to discipline our kids, right? We're just going to be totally tender, totally encouraging of our kids all the time, right? That's going to be awesome. You know what happened? You raised the most emotionally diagnosed, the most emotionally stable, the most emotionally unhappy generation time ever in American history called the millennials. Thank you. That's us, right? Because we need a balance of both. We need a balance of both. You got to have discipline and you got to have tenderness, okay? You can't just go to one extreme. I'm going to discipline all the time. The other extreme and say, I'm going to be 10 times. What happens if you get to one extreme? You're not going to have a balanced life. You're not going to be successful because being a father is a balancing act. It's not an act of extremity, right? It's not an extremist act. It's an act of balance. And you need both. The Bible tells us in Proverbs that if you spare the rod, you'll spoil the child. I want to take a moment to speak to millennial parents because I think my generation still focuses on participation trophies and total tenderness. I want you to understand, if you do not discipline your kids, you will spoil your kids. I mean, the Bible is so right on so many different levels. Statistically speaking, it takes thousands of years for science to confirm what the Bible already teaches us thousands of years ago. But I really believe the Bible calls us to discipline our children. That's something we have to do. Okay? We don't only discipline, we do a balance of both. We discipline, we're tender as fathers. It's a balancing act. We need to find that balance. My third point, under this first point, is control versus support. Okay, I think this is something that men need to work on. I think there's a smaller percentage of men who lean towards control. I think there's a larger percentage of men that lean towards support. I probably lean towards control. There's a lot of great leaders who are able to lift up all kinds of great people around them in their life. They've got vision, they're focused, they know what they want to do, right? And here's the thing, I've gotten to meet a lot of these great people, people who are men who are doing great things with their life. And when I meet them, I always assume that their children are going to be awesome, right? Because they lift up people all around them all the time, right? They're really, really good at it. I assume that their kids are going to be great. But what usually happens when you have a great leader? Their kids usually end up to regress towards the mean. They end up kind of mediocre, right? That's what happens. I think so much of that is because what great leaders do is they control and force their kids into their own vision for their life rather than allowing their kids and supporting their kids into developing their own vision in life. That's something, that's a tension that I have to work on, right? I always have to say, you know what, am I dominating my family too much, right? That's something I have to deal with as a father. On the other end of the spectrum, and I think this is far more common, is parents who say, I just want to be supportive, right? Our kids have so many options. I want them to be able to choose whatever they want. You want unlimited, unmitigated access to the internet? Perfect. You want to determine your own bedtime? Awesome. You want to have a sleepover whenever you want? You do it. As long as you're happy, you do you. I want to be a supportive parent, right? I think our kids crave boundaries. And the reality is, when it comes to control and support, we need a balance of both. Right? We need to help our kids make great choices. We need to help our kids develop a vision for their life. On the other hand, we can't control too much what that vision is going to be. It's a balance of both, because being a father is a balancing act, not an act of extremity. I think it's so critical that we understand this. Ecclesiastes 3 verse 1 tells us, for everything there is a season. There's a time for every activity under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant and a time to harvest, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to turn away. He's telling his son, Ecclesiastes is a book written from a father to a son, and this is a father telling his son, life is a balancing act. Being a father is a balancing act. If you want to be successful, you need to live a life of balance. Jesus says fathers and men were called to a balancing act. Now, here's the thing, fathers. What we do is we walk our kids across the balance beam of life, and we also point where the end of the balance beam is going to, right? We can point it over here. We can point it over there. We start off with our kids as babies, and we lead them in a direction, okay? Not only is it important that we as fathers are balanced, I think it's also important we think about the destination that we're leading our families to. Okay? I think for a lot of us, I want my kids to be financially successful. I want them to be productive citizens. And I want you to know, I think that's a silly goal. For me, my number one goal, more than anything else, if I believe that God is real, if I believe that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life to heaven, the only way, and the only thing I want for my, the only thing, the biggest thing by far, is that I want my kids to love Jesus. Okay? If my kids are homeless drug addicts who love Jesus, or they're super successful businessmen who have lost their soul but gained the whole world, I would much rather be homeless addicts, right? And I don't think that's an either or that it needs to be, but I want us to think about our priorities, fathers. I want us to think about what really, really matters as we lead our kids across the balance beam of life. Now, here's the thing. As a father, I want to be honest with you. A lot of times on the balance beam of fatherhood, I get sidetracked. I get focused. You're focused on provision. You're focused on work or whatever, and sometimes I fall off the beam. Right? Sometimes I fall off the beam. And it happens. We lose balance. We are chasing things that don't matter. And that brings me to my second point. I want you to see this. Being a father is a balancing act. It means recovering from mistakes. Recovering from mistakes. Proverbs tells us that the godly man may trip times, but they will get up again. Disaster is enough to overthrow the wicked. What is the difference between a godly man and a wicked man? The difference is very simple, isn't it? A godly man will get up again, right? A wicked man will give up. Ladies, I want you to listen close, okay? I know this might be shocking to you, but there's no such thing as a perfect man, okay? It doesn't exist. The test of a good man isn't will he mess up. They will all mess up, okay? They all will mess up. That's not the test of a good man. The test of a good man is he tenacious enough to get back up again? And does he have enough courage and fortitude to say, even though I failed, I will get up? Or a righteous man falls seven times, spits up. Right? Society paints this picture of extremism for our fathers, doesn't it? Right? We have, you're either a Beaver Cleaver type of dad or you're a Homer Simpson. There's no in between. And I think our dads are like, if I mess up one time, I'm just a total, you know, that's it. I'm just falling too. And that's not it. The Bible tells us